episode 114 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, which feels like it's about as many runs as the Colorado Rockies scored last night.
Hi-oh.
Be here all week, folks. Hi.
Folks.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And Leica the cattle dog is sitting and making me pet her right now, so she's kind of on the podcast, too, by connection.
Hi, Leica. Who's a good pup?
I want to start this week's edition of the old PDP with what I think is an injustice that has been served in our baseball world, and that is last night was Bark in the Park night at Coors Field, John Gray's favorite night of the year, and John Gray was starting and therefore could not do his annual ritual of standing outside the dugout and petting all the dogs who walk by in the parade, and that is a goddamn travesty.
But, you know, I think he responded in the correct way.
He did. He knew all the dogs were watching.
By tossing six innings, a two-run ball. Struck out six. Gave up five hits.
He had to go out and make sure that it was going to be a day that the dogs would approve of.
Yeah.
John Gray, there were a lot of pitches. 68 strikes.
A lot of good dogs.
Yeah, there were many good dogs. Jenny's dog. How cute is Jenny's dog?
Bodie.
Jenny Kavnar's dog, the Vizsla Bodie, who was in the center field pavilion. That dog is adorable.
Yes.
So many good dogs. The Rockies have a bunch of good dogs up on their Instagram. I believe the Rockies photo blog, which is a really cool site. They'll have some, I think, this week as well. But, you know, John Gray, maybe that's it. Maybe they just need the dogs to be in attendance every time he throws, because even though he can't pet them, he knows, like, okay, this is a crowd that I need to rise to the moment with the dogs in the building.
Well, and apparently there was a story that Drew told that John has a three-legged dog.
Yeah, he does. He does. He's got a three-legged little, I don't remember what it's a terrier of some kind.
Yes.
I don't remember what they're called. But John also had another dog that died really unexpectedly over the offseason, and so they replaced that dog with this three-legged dog. He's a very cool, like an animal. He's one of those guys who... You know, like Tony La Russa's obsession with animals.
Well, he had the weird cat thing.
He's a
crazy cat lady.
Yeah. And Tony La Russa, you know, I will say that's one good thing about Tony La Russa is like the amount of work that he's done with humane societies and all that kind of stuff. John Gray is like on that level of animal love, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I love that about John Gray.
And he's also pitching better lately.
Yeah. And he looks
good. Got a 3.2 ERA over his last five starts.
He's pretty good.
Pitching real well at Coors Field this year.
Yeah, yeah, he has been. That's one of the things. I will also say this. The Atlanta Braves broadcast team of Chip Carey and Joe Simpson is fantastic.
See, and when we were living down there, all we heard were Chip and Joe, and I could not stand
them
by the time
we moved.
And they were
awful. Yeah! I could not ever get into those guys. And nowadays, I don't know if it's like... They've been together for so long that now they're just super comfortable, but like their jokes are good. They play off of each other really well. And I even got a text from one of my best friends from grade school, the one that we talked about on the podcast last week, actually, ironically enough. But my buddy Travis texted me and said, it seems like they actually have done a lot of research about this Rockies team, which you can't always say about opposing broadcasters.
No, for sure.
And he was like, are they normally this good? And I was like, dude, I never remembered being this into this broadcast team before, but they are terrific.
Oh,
and,
good to know.
Yeah. There was a graphic. The reason I brought that up is there was a graphic in which they showed all of the success of all of the young starters at Coors Field this year. You know, Kyle Freeland obviously has been fantastic at Coors Field. John Gray, after last night, 4-0 at Coors Field with an ERA of 3 even. Germán Márquez has been good.
Can't pitch on the road. It's always been the thing with John Gray.
It's always been the thing, you know.
Can't pitch on the road.
Jeff Hoffman, even over his last couple of starts at Coors Field, has been pretty good. He went 6 innings. He gave up 2 runs against the Mets on August 1st, 7 innings. They gave up 1 run against the Phillies on August 6th. So they, you know, they've got some guys who are starting to get things figured out. And, you know, that's what you need at this time in the season. And as we welcome you into the 114th edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, we got some pretty damn cool news to talk about. And that is the return of Chad Bettis to the Colorado Rockies, who came out on Monday. Went 7 shutout innings in his season debut since being diagnosed with cancer in November and then having to undergo chemo after the cancer had spread in March. Made one outing in spring training. Then, even though he was feeling well and blood tests seemed to be fine, then a test in March showed that his cancer had spread, so he underwent chemo. And, you know, for a long time it was, I'd love to get back at some point this year. And I don't think any of us knew what this was going to look like going into August. But not only has Chad Bettis returned 5 months after being diagnosed with cancer spreading and the need for chemo. In November, he underwent surgery, didn't have treatment with chemo or radiation. But then March, he undergoes chemo. 5 months later, he's back in a major league rotation. And not only that, he's now the most veteran guy, the oldest member of the rotation at 28.
Yeah.
And a guy who comes in to stabilize a rotation that right now is steaming towards the playoffs, which is pretty damn cool.
I mean, right now the rotation is Gray, Bettis, Hoffman, Freeland, and Marquez, which is really...
And it's in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
It's going to go Bettis, Freeland, Gray, Hoffman, Marquez.
Yeah. And really, it's
easy to remember.
Almost the way that they drew it up at the beginning of the season, minus Tyler Anderson.
It is indeed.
Which is something we have not had so far this year for the Rockies.
No. Yeah, I mean, you really, you were hopeful that that was going to be your group. Marquez, I think, was a question mark coming into the year, but obviously he's more than proven himself. But you figured Chatwood, Anderson, they would factor in there. Those two guys, one of them has pitched himself out of the rotation. The other one has battled injury for the last 2-3 months. And right now, these are your best five. If you were going to open up the last 2 weeks of the season, need to structure your rotation, figure out a way to make it into the playoffs by getting that top wild card game, these would be the five you would go with. You know, yep. Chad Bettis is going to be a bit of a question mark because he's still going to be rusty. And Chad Bettis came out and had a lot on his side on Monday. 7 innings, 6 hits, no runs, 2 strikeouts, no walks. He was not the most effective that we will see him, but he got through 7 innings on 90 pitches. I think even when he was missing his spots, he was doing so effectively, and the Rockies ended up scoring 3 in the bottom of the 8th inning to win that game. But just like, what an inspiration, man. And yeah, the energy that comes off of Chad Bettis now of just being happy to be back.
It wasn't the point of his final line. It's not the point
exactly.
at all of what he was able to accomplish on Monday night at Coors Field. The fact that he was able to come out on top of everything and then pitch the way that we remember Chad Bettis pitching, it was such a spine-tingling moment. There were so many of those spine-tingling moments throughout the night, whether it was when he first ran out to the mound or he got his first strikeout or he's getting out of a couple of jams here and there in the middle innings and then finally got that final out in the 7th inning walking back. And that moment with him and Bud Black in the dugout,
so
it really
cool.
does, it brings a tear to your eye. The fact that, you know, Bud just kind of staring at him, not really saying anything. Like, he just looking like he's just a proud father, and Chad Bettis not saying anything back, and just kind of this moment they had together that was caught on the root or AT&T Sportsnet cameras, whatever.
Fox Sports Route AT&T.
That was one of the cooler moments that we're going to have this entire season for the Rockies.
That was, you know, until there is postseason play here, that was the best moment of 2017. And this has been a season that has had its share of cool moments, but nothing's going to surpass that in a regular season capacity. It was so, so cool. And yeah, to see, we've seen Bud Black and this relationship that he's built with these young pitchers all season and the way that it's grown and that it's evolved over the course of the year. And we've made that comment many, many times that it just seems like Bud Black has this fatherly-like relationship with these young guys, and I've never seen a look of more pride on somebody's face than the way Bud Black looked at Chad Bettis after that start. And it was cool because then you saw Chad hugging his teammates and how I think his teammates were more wrapped up in the moment of that start than Chad was. You know, he's hugging his teammates, he's happy, he's excited, but I'm sure there was a lot of relief for him to have it behind him, whereas everybody else is like, man, you're Superman today.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn cool.
No one can think or fathom what it's like to be in Chad Bettis' shoes at that point.
Right.
And my favorite part of the entire night was people and players around the league who had never even met Chad Bettis.
Right, right.
Or barely run into contact with him. You know, your Brandon McCarthy's, your Andrew McCutcheon's, Adam Jones, John Lester,
John Lester, cancer survivor.
Right. Like, just them tweeting out tweets of support for Chad Bettis, saying, you know, John Lester saying, oh, I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, I never met you, but you're already a brother to me because of what you've been through and what I've been through. Like, You know, that was the coolest part, that everybody was realizing what a momentous thing it was. And to be fair, he's the second guy to have that happen to this year in the big leagues, Jameson Taillon for
and
the Pirates.
Jameson Taillon also tweeted on August 14th, "Ready to watch at CBettis 35, return to a big league mound, right back where you belong, brother. Never a doubt you would be back this year." And when the Rockies went to Pittsburgh, those two guys got a chance to talk, and that was – you know, the type of conversation that you would like to be a fly on the wall for and also not want to be a fly on the wall for, because those two guys share something so intense and so unique. And, you know, John Lester of the Chicago Cubs is that in that boat. Anthony Rizzo of the Chicago Cubs is in that boat. He had cancer when he was in high school. So it's such a small and incredible fraternity of these guys who have gone through this and beaten it and come back. And to see the way the baseball community rallied around Chad coming back and after that start. I mean, one of the neatest things that we saw all week was the Rockies tweeted the most important score of the day today. Chad Bettis 1, cancer 0.
Right.
And almost every single team in Major League Baseball responded with a GIF. I know it's GIF, but the most
pretentious
people
say. No, it's GIF.
Say,
it's GIF. It's GIF. Okay. No, we're going to say GIF. Like peanut butter.
They all responded with GIFs of players clapping or yelling or pointing or whatever to show their encouragement. And that was it. And it was just this thread of teams responding to the Rockies. And that was so, so cool. And the other thing that was great about it was as the team started responding, then you saw fans of those teams responding in kind. So it was, you know, Dodgers fan here, congratulations to Chad, can't wait to see him in LA. Rangers fan here, congratulations to Chad, whatever. Like, all of the support that came from every walk of the baseball world was so amazing to see. And really, you know, not to make it about anybody other than Chad, but everybody kind of needed that. You know, Monday, everybody, I think, wanted something positive to look at in the world, and Chad provided that for a lot of people who watch Major League Baseball and are fans, especially the Rockies, and that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it was coming off the 3-game sweep at the hands of the Marlins, and also it was coming off the best weekend for Nazis since like 1944. So, you know, I think everybody needed what Chad Bettis was able to accomplish on Monday night in their lives.
Yeah. You know, I know it's difficult for some people to take this stand, but we're firmly anti-Nazi on the Purple Dinosaur podcast. I know some of us in the world today don't apparently have the spine to say that anymore, but we'll take the full-on anti-Nazi platform here.
Yeah, and if you're pro-Nazi,
if you're pro-Nazi,
just go ahead and click that unfollow button.
Yeah,
right
we don't need you around. Click the unfollow button and then blast yourself into the sun, please. So Chad Bettis, big congratulations to him. Also in health news of a baseball sense, Nolan Arenado was hit by a pitch in the hand on Sunday, and you kind of thought to yourself, like, well, there goes the season. Broken hand. Nolan's going to be done, and so is this season. Nolan came back on Tuesday. He was fine. Actually had a pinch hitting appearance on Monday. So he apparently got away with just a contusion from that. And thankfully the Rockies will not be missing their star third baseman for a while. Nolan's been back in the lineup ever since. That's good news. You know, it's a month and a half ago, we talked about how the Rockies really had an opportunity to make some hay in this race against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, coming into the day today, we're recording this on Thursday. The Rockies are 67-53. They are one game up on the D-backs, who are 66-54. That puts the Rockies 5 games up on the suddenly resurgent Milwaukee Brewers, who have won 4 straight. That was after losing 6 straight. But the Brewers and the Cardinals, the Rockies are 5 games ahead of the Brewers, 6 games ahead of the Cardinals, who look like the only other couple of teams that are really going to be in that race. But the Rockies have played a month plus against bad teams and have really not made any headway out of it. And that is concerning.
19-17 since July 3rd. And that time only playing the Nationals and the Indians, the two teams over 500 at the time. The Cardinals over 500 now when the Rockies played them and they got swept by them. But
the Marlins are 3 games
really,
under. That
was
a disaster series.
It was not the case
then
when they played them.
Yeah, so not great, Bob.
No, but listen, they're over 500. They're 19-17 in that time. It's not like they've been, you know, playing altogether too poorly. But
and again, they'd be four games up, 3.5 games up on the division leader in the National League Central in the Chicago Cubs. So it's all relative. The Rockies record is good enough to also be leading the American League Central and pretty close to the lead in the American League East. The Boston Red Sox have really turned it on there. But
yeah, and right now they're 5 games up on the next closest team besides the Diamondbacks, of course. But they're also 6 games up in the loss column on the Brewers and Cardinals. So that's a very good sign.
Right, because you can't make those up.
Yeah, can't make losses up. So the loss column is the column to look for. The 53 loss for the Rockies, 59 for both the Brewers and the Cardinals. So they're doing well enough right now, but I have a feeling it's going to be a lot like the 2015 Houston Astros were, where they got that big lead early in the season and played 480 to 500 ball for the final 2 to 3 months and just barely snuck into the playoffs and then eventually nearly beat the Royals in the ALDS after winning the wild card game. But you know, if that year for the Astros, if there was an extra week in the regular season, they probably missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
But there wasn't, and they made the playoffs. They won the wild card game, and then, you know, we know what happened next. But really, I'm only looking at that one road trip that the Rockies have in September. The 8-game road trip, September 7th to September 14th, 4 games at the Dodgers, 4 games at the Diamondbacks. That is a brutal road trip to have in September.
Yep.
If they come out of that with their heads held high, then good God, power to them. But they cannot afford a 1-7 there.
No. That looms massively. I think this next road trip is pretty big, too, because they go on the road to Kansas City. The Royals have played a lot better as of late. And they go on the road to Atlanta. And the Rockies traditionally do not play well in Atlanta. Although, prior to Tuesday, they had won 11 straight over the Braves at Coors Field. But when you go on the road now with this team, you start to feel like you have throughout franchise history. The first couple months of the season, you felt like, oh man, they're getting away from Coors Field. This is a time to get right, which was such a bizarro world type of feel. But they have been trash on the road for the last couple of months, and that concerns you a little bit. That series in Los Angeles and the series in Arizona, those are going to define the playoff race. If they go on the road for those two series from September 7th to September 14th, and they go, 1-7 or 2-6 or even 3-5, and they can't come away with a series win.
Boy, 3-5, I think would be nice.
Yeah, that would almost be an accomplishment. But still, then I think it lets you know this team is going to be in a full-on dogfight until the end. Whereas if they're able to go on the road, split in Los Angeles and win a series in Arizona, which does not seem likely, or split the road trip down the middle and go 4-4, then I think you feel pretty good about your chances because you come home, take on a bad Padres team, and then you wrap up the series with the Marlins or the season with the Marlins in town and then the Dodgers. And that's going to be, for the Dodgers, it'll be a throwaway series at the end of the year. Apologies to Brian Kilpatrick's pinned tweet.
Unless they're going for the all-time wins record.
Right. True. But yeah, it's,
For this team to start out 24-10 on the road, they've gone 6-21 on the road since.
Yep.
6-21 on the road since June 11th.
Yeah.
6-21.
Really not good. Really not good.
But the good thing about that is that in that time they've been playing very, very well at home. So it's a weird dichotomy because let's see, in that time from 6-15. So in that same time frame, at home, when they played 6-21 ball on the road, they're 20-9 at Coors Field.
Which is good.
That's great.
Pretty good. But like again,
if you could have played 400 ball on the road, you could have really set yourself up to be in a good position come September.
Exactly.
Instead, you're playing 250 ball.
That's a problem. You figured out a way to be successful again at home, and all the progress that you've made there, you've lost because you have stumbled in whatever it was that was making you successful on the road. So you haven't really gained any ground, even despite your resurgence at home. So that's been frustrating. And, you know, I think it speaks to a larger thing in Denver right now, which is this bizarre. There's kind of a lack of excitement, I think, of what this Rockies team is doing right now. And, you know, every time I go on for radio interviews especially with people who, you know, are just like way too boastful about like, oh, I haven't paid much attention to the Rockies for years because the Montfort's blah, blah, blah.
Yawn.
It's weird to work in an industry where people brag about their ignorance as if it's an asset, but then there's always the, well, they've just been a 500 team since the start of the season. What is worth even paying attention to about this team? First of all, they haven't been. They've played above 500 ball every month of the year except for July when they went 500. Second of all, they picked up a handful of games on the 500 mark since the All-Star break. And third, they're still leading the wild card race and have the third best record in the National League. And yet, for some reason, like, it doesn't feel like people are gearing up for a pennant race outside of Coors Field. When you go to Coors Field, every day there's 35,000 plus day games, night games, weekdays, weekends, whatever. And it's electric there. It's terrific. But it doesn't feel like people are behind it the way that you felt in 2007 or, to a lesser extent, 2009, because I wasn't here for the summer of 2009. It feels strange, especially in light of the fact that the Broncos are going to be garbage. They're going to be a mediocre team led by maybe two different terrible quarterbacks. So it's not like there's anything to get excited about there. So I don't know. It's a little strange.
Yeah, the Avs are going to be garbage. The Nuggets are going to be bad. They might sneak into the eighth seed. It's not like there's a lot of hope on the horizon for Denver sports teams.
It's not like anybody in this town cares about college sports. And not only that, but there really aren't that good college sports around anyway. It's strange, with the exception of University of Denver hockey and lacrosse.
And basketball, right?
And basketball soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. It's a little weird. Now, granted, it is August, and as the Rockies get closer and closer and hopefully clinch a playoff spot relatively early, not going down to game 160 or 161 or 162, then I think people will get into it, because then you know, okay, we're going to have playoff baseball here. Even if it's only a game, we're going to have playoff baseball. Whether it's in this town or with this town's team, if the Rockies
plenty
have
of time
go
for those Dodgers fans or Cubs fans to buy their tickets.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It'll be great. Yeah. So I don't know, but it's a little strange.
Yeah. And right now the Rockies, as it stands, have the fifth toughest schedule to end the year of any team in baseball, the toughest of any of the wild card contenders. And I'm not counting the Pirates in there, cause they're not a wild card contender. They play 20 more games against winning teams with winning records. Like, that's tough.
The Dodgers, by the way, I believe have the third easiest schedule for the end of the season.
Yeah, they're sixth easiest in terms of how we look at it right now. They play 19 more games of teams winning records. The Cubs have the easiest schedule. Good for them.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Terrific. I don't know. It's just a little odd that it doesn't feel like people are more fired up about what's going on. Maybe it's just too early. Maybe that's the case.
I mean, it's not, though.
It's not. Yeah. But in this town, it's not too early, but, you know, the regular perceptions of where we are on the sports calendar don't really seem to matter, because people start paying attention to football in June, and baseball, for some reason, takes a back burner until October, if the local team is good.
Every year, man, I just get less and less excited for football.
You and me both, man. And it's not even just like I'm trying to be a contrarian, but I just, like, this year, I have never been less excited for a football season than this year. And I was talking about this with a friend of mine who was in the Denver sports media, and for the interest of not, like, you know, crushing his work, because people will be like, oh, no, I can't trust that guy. But we were having a conversation about just how unappealing football season has become, because first of all, football fans, like, Broncos Twitter takes everything way too seriously. Like, there's no room for humor or fun in anything.
No chill at all.
No. And it's like, sports are supposed to be fun, man. And maybe that's a function of the Broncos always being competitive, that you can't allow yourself the nihilism of, like, well, we're going to suck anyway, might as well have some jokes with it. True. Maybe that's where it comes from. But it just seems like football at large, and football has been tied for my favorite sport my entire life. I'm a bigger college football fan than I am an NFL fan, because of, I think, the despicable way the NFL has conducted itself for the last, you know, 50 years. But I just don't, like, every year it gets less and less exciting. There's zero parity in the league. The superstars that the league is marketed around, I don't find identifiable at all. The commissioner of the league has no business in his job, has no moral barometer for how he's supposed to conduct himself or how he's supposed to apply discipline or how he's supposed to project the image of the league. And it literally kills people. Like, it is a sport that has tried to pour water on science that could save people's lives who have blown their brains out because of symptoms caused by playing the sport. And it's just like every year it gets less and less exciting to me. And nowadays, like when I watch a football game, and you and I have had this conversation before. Now when I watch a football game and a dude just gets laid out, like back in the day, you used to be like, oh my God, what a hit. And on NFL Live, they would have jacked up. Yeah. Exactly. Like all that machismo, dumb idiocy. Now it's like I watch that and I think to myself, like, is that guy going to be able to feed himself when he's 54 years old?
Yeah.
You know? Right. I just don't,
so anyway,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, what we're trying to say is people should be more excited about the Rockies.
Yeah, people should be more excited about the fact that you're going to have a fun team to watch for the next month and a half. And this isn't like, please like my sport. It's just like, I don't know, man. From an objective standpoint, I don't get why you would be more excited about practices that are going to determine a starting job between two bad quarterbacks than you would be about like a team that's in an actual playoff race
or a potential MVP candidate,
right?
Maybe
multiple
MVP
potential
candidates.
MVP candidates, exactly.
Yeah. Now that Bryce Harper's hurt,
I don't know, a little strange. The Rockies right now, like we said, have kind of the rotation that you figured they were going to have. They have a bullpen that looks like things are really falling into some pretty good roles. Antonio Sensatella's role, I think, is somewhat being clearly defined now. Tyler Chatwood gives you an option now out of the bullpen. Jake McGee has looked great. Pat Neshek, for all of the bad luck that he has suffered, Pat Neshek
yeah,
has
right.
looked pretty good. Greg Holland, shaky, but, we'll see how that goes. And it feels like those things are settled. The offense is concerning. And Anthony
last
had a number.
Night notwithstanding,
right.
Yeah.
Last night notwithstanding. And maybe it's because I wasn't watching last night. Maybe that's why. I don't know. Maybe they just decided to break out the fireworks while I wasn't going to be able to watch. But Anthony had a number about over this run of 19 and 17, the Rockies run differential and how last night impacted that.
So, yeah. So in the same time that they have been 19 and 17 since July 3rd, they have outscored their opponents by a cool 28 runs, which is great. Fine, whatever. 15 of those runs came last night.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, but their run differential, you know, games yeah. like that helped their run differential last night. Now they're plus 59.
Yeah. I still, that will forever go down as the dumb tweet of the year when. Wasn't that High Heat Stats guy?
I think it was, yeah.
When he tweeted, ask the Rangers how last year's bad run differential one-run games worked out. And I was like
yeah, they made the playoffs.
They made the playoffs?
Like,
what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about, man?
Oh, yo, Rockies are going to feel it soon. Like, yeah, okay. We'd love a playoff
yeah,
appearance.
Yeah, sure. I don't see really how this is an issue, but okay.
No, I don't know what it is about being an internet stat man that makes you such a prick.
I know.
At all times.
They all are.
They all
it's
are.
So weird.
To a man, they are.
I don't get it. This is very bizarre. But this is the issue. I tweeted during Chad Bettis' start, like, Chad, welcome back. You'll notice some things are different about this team this year, namely that the offense on any given night can be absolutely enraging, which they were on Monday. They ended up going scoreless into the bottom of the eighth, and then the Rockies pulled out a 3-0 win. But it's like, oh, you know, we have seen some flashes over the last couple of weeks from Trevor Story. We have seen some from Carlos Gonzalez. Not ready to say either of those guys is heating up. But, you know, Ryan McMahon gets called up. He's sitting on the bench. Raimel Tapia gets sent. Yeah. A day game after a night game. But Raimel Tapia gets sent back to AAA. Like, there seem to be ways to change things up. And that apparently is not really in the offing. Now, granted, Ryan McMahon isn't going to play over Nolan or over Mark Reynolds or over DJ that often, but you can give those guys a breather, and you can let him pinch hit.
It's bizarre. Like, the sum of the parts, the Rockies are averaging 5.24 runs per game this year. That's their highest mark since 2007. They're hitting 275 as a team, one of the best marks of the last 10 years for them as a team. It's just a super, super weird year that we look at this team like, oh, what's wrong with this team? The offense. The offense is wrong with this team, which is it is. That's the case. The pitching has been, you know, at least at the very least adequate. I mean, they're right now, their ERA, total ERA, 4.59, lowest since 2013.
And when adjusted for park factors, I think is the seventh best in baseball.
Yeah, it's up there. I've not checked the actual numbers on that one, but yes, it's up there. So like it's it's hard to say that, oh, it's the pitching's fault, but it definitely is the pitching's fault. Or the hitting's fault, sorry.
Right.
Like
right.
It's always the pitching's fault. Now it's the hitting's fault. So good for them. Good for them.
And the Rockies year in and year out are gonna lead Major League Baseball in runs scored and in offense and all that kind of stuff, but you have to account for a wider berth of lead in those things. Rockies right now have the highest team batting average in the National League at 275. It's only 1 point better than the Washington Nationals. They've actually ceded the lead in runs scored. Rockies have scored 629. The Nationals have now scored 633 runs this season. They're just not a dominant offense the way that you would expect an offense that trots out Nolan Arenado and formerly Carlos Gonzalez and a batting champion in DJ LeMahieu and the best leadoff guy in the National League in Charlie Blackmon. Like, you would expect that team to go out and give you 5 to 6 runs a night during a boring week, you know? Hasn't – that's been the issue.
Yeah, and, like, they're not – again, last night I was saying they're not putting up – you know, those games where they have just, 10, 12 runs. Like, that's not what they do anymore,
right.
It seems
no.
like.
No. Which is... Which
we got so accustomed to that.
Exactly. Even, I mean, like, through bad teams.
Yeah, they scored 17 runs last night. They had scored 18 in their previous 6 games combined.
Oh. Whoa. Good.
Yeah.
Harvey.
Not great.
Yeah, not great, Bob. The offense has, as odd as this seems, improved for the most part from month to month. They registered a 247 team offense while going 16-10 in April. Figure that one out. Then batted 278 as a team, and they went 17-12 in May. 276 in June, they went 15-12. 297 in July when they went 12-12, but they also had their highest ERA for any month of the season at 538. And so far through 14 games in August, they are 7-7. The offense is batting 278, but the pitching staff has its second best ERA of any month. Actually, so far, its best ERA of any month this season at 3.87. The problem is it feels like the offense all comes one game at a time. You know what I mean? Like, they'll go out and they'll throw together a 17-run night like last night. And other than that, they just don't have consistent big offensive stretches. Prior to last night, they had scored 3 runs or fewer in 8 straight games.
Yeah.
Which had never happened before in franchise history.
And they won 2 of those, which, you know, and they should have won 2 more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Oh.
It's a weird year in Denver where we're worried about the offense. And we're like, oh, the pitching
strange.
Will be fine.
It's very strange. But if you had to make adjustments right now, is there anything that you can do on a regular basis? Because Carlos Gonzalez would seem to be the one that you could really say, yeah, Raimel Tapia has shown himself to be a better option this year. Cargo is still playing good defensively. He's not the Cargo of old, but you know more often than not he's going to be able to make some above average plays for you and he'll make all the average plays. Trevor Story is not going anywhere, and I got asked that question the other day. Is Trevor Story still your everyday shortstop for the playoff run? If they weren't going to sit Trevor Story, if they were going to, they would have done it in July. You don't get into mid and late August still running a guy out there every day and then maybe taking his job away from him.
Well,
so that's
the thing with Trevor Story, it's not been there in terms of his offense this year, what we thought was going to be last year, the 2-home run night last night, notwithstanding. But his defense has been fantastic at shortstop all year. I mean, even with the fact that he's striking out, you know, what, 20% of the time, 30% of the time almost.
Right.
You know, he's still been worth nearly 2 wins above replacement this year because of his defense. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. Yeah, he swings and misses all the damn time. But at the same time, you don't have anybody better. Pat Verlaeke is not necessarily an everyday guy. He's been great in spells as a pinch hitter. He's been great in that regard. He's not an everyday guy. Trevor Story beats him out defensively. He should be playing every day over Pat Verlaeke. Alexi Amarista, he's still cashing checks on this team. That's, you know, great.
Yeah, that's something.
I guess. I'm not sure what the point of him is.
Yeah.
At all. He's starting in right field today. Okay.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't know what to say about that.
You could have Ramel Tapia there. But,
could have Ramel Tapia there. Okay. Yeah, how's that? He's by the Ramel Tapia is still, you know, hitting .287 in the big leagues this year before he got sent down. And, you know, he's been a .370 hitter in AAA this year.
And it's not like Alexi Amarista is, like, costing him a ton of money and they're not going to be able to part ways with him or he's, like, adding. Alexi Amarista is you already have two people who can do his jobs. Pat Valaika can do everything he does defensively and is better at the plate. And Ramel Tapia is markedly better offensively and can actually play the outfield because it's one of his natural things that he does as a baseball player, being an outfielder. Yeah, I don't really get the Alexi Amarista thing.
No, and since he's been sent down again to AAA, Ramel Tapia is 12-for-21.
Ah, that's pretty good. And that's what's so strange to me is it's like you're not doing Tapia any good by sending it's like, you know, we've made this comparison before, but it's like continuing to play a video game on normal difficulty when you've beaten it 15 times. You know what I mean? Like it just doesn't it doesn't make you any better to continue playing the show on rookie mode when you've been playing the show for 5 years. Like you just, I don't really get it. Trevor Story, I will say one thing for Trevor Story. The pop seems like it's coming along a little bit more. Over the first 3 months of the year, Story combined for 10 extra base hits. He's got 13 since the beginning of July. He had 10 home runs through the end of June. He's got 8 since the beginning of July over 36 games, which is as opposed to 67 for his first 10 of the year. So maybe the thump is coming along a little bit better for Trevor Story. He's got homers in 2 straight. He's got 3 over the last couple of nights. He drove in 6 last night, which is great.
He doesn't have a double since July 17th.
Yeah, how strange is that?
Yeah,
right?
Super weird.
So weird. He doesn't have anything. He has 9 hits this month, 6 singles, 3 homers. Like nothing in between. But Story did have a fairly decent July. Like when you look overall at his numbers, 250, 310, 513 was the line and 823 OPS. It's not great, but that's more along the lines, I think, of what we figured Trevor Story would be as a major leaguer. Somebody who could hit, you know, 20 to 25 homers with regularity, maybe be a 250 to 270 type of guy. It's just, yeah. He started in such a hole with that April. He OPS 683 in April.
I'm surprised it's that high.
Yeah.
Oh, and he struck out in 19 straight games too. You know, talking about Aaron Judge striking out in 33 straight games to break the single season record set by Adam Dunn. Trevor Story, I think he has 4 of the 5 longest strikeout streaks of any Rockies player already. He's been in the league for a year and a half.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah. See, he is. Yep. He sure does. The active one. It's number 19. He's got 4 of the top 5 strikeout streaks in Rockies history. Brad Hopp has the number 1 overall, though. 26 in 2007.
Man.
But well, Story then has 1 of 24, 2 of 20, including 1 this year, and now 1 of 19, which is still active.
At least 2007 was a good year.
Yeah.
It means they're going to the World Series. Long strikeout streaks means they're going to the World Series.
You just look at that streak. Like, and Trevor Story's been in the league for a year and a half, and he already has 4 of the top 5 streaks for the Rockies in terms of games with a strikeout. That's crazy.
Boy, oh boy.
But that would be the thing, that the easiest thing to do is say, oh, well, Trevor Story. Well, no, he's going to be there the entire day. I just don't know why Alexi Amarista is still on the team, but we had that conversation re-Jordan Lyles for 3 months.
Yep. Maybe he's just he's the new Jordan Lyles. He's the position player Jordan Lyles. Right. Now.
Well, and also getting Mark Reynolds back hitting in was big for the Rockies.
Yeah,
they needed
true.
Him because
Mark
he had
Reynolds
a really,
really, was a
really
ghost
poor July.
Yeah.
He had a poor July at .229, only 3 homers, a .729 OPS, by far his worst of the season.
Right.
His previous low in a month was .887 back in May. July, you know, recently, last couple of games, he's been killing the ball. Already 3 home runs to match his total in July already in 14 August games, driven in 9, .283 average, .887 OPS. That's the Mark Reynolds we saw the first 3 months of the season.
Right.
Because we've seen Mark Reynolds have hot starts before and then kind of peter out. So we saw the hot start. It went all the way through June through for the most part. And so we're like, oh, well, maybe he's just going to have one of those years and continue that stretch. And then he was really, really bad near the end of June and then into July. He struck out a combined 72 times in 48 games in June and July, which is the Mark Reynolds that we know and love.
That is the classic Mark Reynolds.
That's who Mark Reynolds is.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's He's only struck out once per game in August, which, hey, that's fine. 14 times in 14 games. But the average is back up again to where we saw the first couple of months. The OPS is up again. And right now, Mark Reynolds is having one of his best seasons of his career. I mean, he's cut a strikeout rate, at least marginally, comparatively to what it normally is for a guy like Mark Reynolds when he's striking out 220 times a year. You know, the average is where it was last year at 282. It's 280 this year. The OPS is the highest since he hit 44 bombs back in 2009 for the D-backs. I mean,
it's big. Having him here is big. Yeah, that's true.
Because they need that lineup to get lengthened. And when he is not hitting at all, that lineup gets real, real short.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. He's another guy that you really, at the beginning of the season, teams had to account for him as much or more so with the way he started than Nolan or Chuck or certainly Cargo. So it kind of added a dimension that I don't think people were expecting quite as much out of the gate. And that really enabled that hot start. To see him disappear for a while really shortened that string of guys down to really two. Because DJ, you're not afraid, is going to beat you power-wise. You're afraid of DJ when he comes up either to start an inning, right, or with runners on. Yeah. But you're not really afraid of DJ, you know, if there's a runner at first base and it's Ryan Hannigan and DJ's at the plate, you're not really that scared of DJ damaging you by bringing in a run. But if DJ comes up with Charlie at first or with runners at second and third or whatever, DJ becomes terrifying because you know that he can just lash a single the other way and bring in two.
He had four hits last night.
Yeah. So Mark Reynolds was so sorely needed in that start, and especially because of the absence of Cargo this year, it's big to have him back. And they're going to need – that's what – this right now, I think, comes down to for the Rockies. Can they get on a run where they go out and they win 10 of 13 or 15 of 20 or something like that, where you can really start to regain some of that ground and some of that momentum and put a decent buffer between yourself and these also-rans that are charging in the National League right now? If they can't do that, it's going to be stressful all the way through the end of September.
Well, it's going to be stressful anyway. I think all through September, I think we know that.
Well, thanks to 2010. If not for 2010, I think you'd think to yourself, like, you know, they get a decent lead, they could probably ride that through all the way to the end. But then 2010 happened, and now it's like, well, probably not.
Yeah.
Now they could just go out and lose every game for the final 2 weeks of the regular season, because we've seen it happen.
Yep.
The Rockies also made a move on Saturday that, for some reason, actually had a whole lot of people up in the mentions like, what are you doing this for? Which was stupid, because you risk literally nothing to do something like this. And this is from Nick Groke of the Denver Post. Quote, the Rockies signed Ryan Howard to a minor league deal Saturday after scouts indicated the 37-year-old slugger might have more postseason hits in his bat. They assigned him to AAA Albuquerque, where he went 1-for-6 Sunday in his first appearance, a 22-1 Isotopes victory. That Ryan Howard, in case you were there is another Ryan Howard who is a shortstop slash kind of utility-ish guy in the San Francisco Giants organization. This is not that one. This is the one that you remember crushing your hopes and dreams in 2009. Thanks, Houston Street. Ryan Howard has doubled twice in his first four games with Albuquerque. He's driven in a couple of runs. He's 2-for-15. He also has 6 strikeouts and no walks. I don't expect anything out of Ryan Howard, and I also don't understand why people freaked out about this a little bit. The thing about minor league contracts is they cost you nothing. You have no obligations to the guys that you signed to minor league contracts in a situation like this, and you didn't add him to the major league roster. Somebody asked us the other day, like, did they sign him to Albuquerque? Because I hadn't seen where he was assigned yet. You don't sign – you just sign guys to one minor league contract. You don't sign him to a specific level. So you sign a guy, and then you can assign him to whatever team – you want him on, so the Rockies put him in Albuquerque. If Ryan Howard doesn't hit in Albuquerque, guess what? The Rockies can release him. They'll save the $6,000 or whatever they're paying him a month because he's a major league veteran at AAA. He's not on the 40-man roster. He's not commanding a major league salary. There was literally nothing to lose by signing Ryan Howard. So calm down.
Yeah. Noted Rockies killer Eric Karros, I saw him at work the other day. And he walked in, and the first thing he said, because he always ribs me about the Rockies, because, you know, he's a Dodger, and he really knows how to kill Rockies fans, because he did for his entire career. So he asked me, he's like, hey, I got a question for you. What the hell are you guys doing with Ryan Howard? And my response was,
probably nothing.
I was like, well, I think he was, I think he literally had blood. He was able to stand on 2 feet. They put a bat in his hand. He didn't drop it. So they're like, okay. And that was pretty much it.
Yeah. You know.
And that's, I think that is really wise. Like, if he comes up in September with call-ups and he's like a random pinch hitter in a, like a Giambi type appearance off
right.
the bench. Okay.
Which is exactly what happened in 2009.
That's what he's going to be. If he is even that.
Jason Giambi was signed in August of a playoff year for the Rockies to a minor league contract and made the postseason roster as an option off the bench. Ryan Howard, is he going to be that guy? Does he have as much left in him as Jason Giambi? Probably not.
I don't think he's going to be that guy for a potential playoff run for the Rockies either. Giambi was a different case.
Right.
Because of what he did with the Rockies that year, right. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
But there was nothing to lose on that line. And we just had so many people asking the question that I think it warranted some explanation. There's also, we should probably have the conversation about waivers. So at this stage in the major league season, we are past the non-waiver trade deadline. That was July 31st. Now, teams can make waiver trades, and the way waivers work, which is extraordinarily complicated, but I'll try to at least explain it to the best of my knowledge, which probably won't be that great, but teams put players through waivers in August. Teams put a ton of players on waivers in August.
Probably and every player.
Basically, everybody goes on waivers at some point. So there was a big, big storm this week because the Marlins had placed Giancarlo Stanton on waivers. Everybody does that. Everybody places players on waivers. The Rockies have probably placed Chuck and Nolan on waivers. Everybody does it. And the reason is if teams claim that player, you can negotiate a trade at that stage. You basically can gauge the market for what guys could theoretically net you. Those guys aren't getting traded. Giancarlo Stanton is more than likely not being traded. Not only is Giancarlo Stanton not being traded, nobody wants to take on that contract.
Well, yeah, plus, it'd be a PR nightmare. And two, you want to take on a contract worth, I think, $285 or $290 million left on that thing?
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
Right, exactly.
Jeter's going to be like, yeah, go ahead, take it.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So it just like the waiver thing came up because there was an SB Nation story. I think it was an SB Nation story about like we're ranking the teams that could trade for Giancarlo Stanton. It's like, yeah, they could.
Yeah,
but the idea that the Marlins put him on waivers in order to trade him is pretty dumb. If they wanted to trade Giancarlo Stanton, they would have done it at the deadline or they'll do it over the offseason. You're not going to make a waiver deal for Giancarlo Stanton. That seems pretty dumb.
Yes.
So this was actually explained very well by Matt Snyder at CBS, and he used old friend Yoli Chacin as the case study. He said Chacin 10-7 with a 4.22 ERA and 1.29 whip. Quote, teams aren't going to be falling over themselves in order to acquire him, but if a contender sees a short-term strong need for starting pitching depth, a minor deal might be worked out. That's the key, a minor deal. You don't ordinarily see big names move on waiver deals. And Snyder went on to say, quote, basically he's the ideal August trade candidate. Here's how it would work. The Padres put Chacin on waivers. If more than one team puts in a claim on him, the one with the worst record, so it goes in order by the worst records and beyond. So if you are the Giants or the Phillies or whoever, and you claim somebody off of waivers, you're going to get priority over a contending team that would also claim that player off of waivers. That team would win the claim. The worst team wins the claim. If no National League team claims him, so in the same league, you go first, then the same process goes by for the American League team, yada, yada. If it's an American League team that puts a player on waivers, AL teams get first claim at him, whatever. If a claim is awarded to a team, the team that put the player on waivers then has three options. The first is you can just pull that player back. So teams that claim Giancarlo Stanton, the Marlins don't even have to listen. Then they have an idea of who would be interested, whatever. You can just pull Stanton back. He's yours. You keep him. Nothing happens. And this is the explanation. Quote, The reason this happens a lot is most teams try to get as many players as possible through waivers, so they still have the option to trade him to anyone. If the player doesn't get through and they wish to keep him, teams can just pull him back and he won't be traded this season. The second option is to trade that player to the team that claimed him, and the third option is to just let him go to the team that claimed him, which doesn't really happen because teams want to get something in return. But if a player clears waivers, then he can be traded to anybody for the rest of the season. So that's the reason why teams put so many guys on waivers. They want to get as many through as possible so they have those options out there where they can make those deals if they come up. There's really not necessarily any sign that teams want to trade these guys, but at least those options are available. So that's the reason behind it. And we actually tweeted out the other day, I tweeted, I see it's the annual nobody knows how waivers work in baseball time of the year. And Warren Miller, the Rockies head of PR, retweeted it and said, this is the tweet of the year every year. Because people just freak out. Yeah. You see a big name on waivers, you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to get traded. Not really, not necessarily.
Nah, they're definitely not. Definitely not going to get traded.
Probably not.
Those big trades like that happen in August are very, very rare. Remember
right.
The one that sent every single Red Sox to the Dodgers back
right.
in like 2012?
Right, exactly.
Like Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford, Josh Beckett. But that was just a complete salary dump
for
the Red Sox.
Right.
And that's why the Dodgers wouldn't take on all those salaries and when nobody else would. Like, if Verlander gets traded, the Astros will have to take on some salary, I'm sure, because you know they're talking or whatever. There's a lot of moving parts. It's not as easy as it was before August 1st.
That's the other thing to keep in mind about this. And Matt Snyder also notes that Justin Verlander is the guy who he thinks could go in August on a waiver deal. But if a player is put on waivers, say Giancarlo Stanton is put on waivers and a team claims him, the risk in that is then the Marlins can just let him go because the claiming team takes on the entirety of the contract. So if Giancarlo Stanton goes on waivers, and a team says, yeah, we'll take him. Do you want to work out a deal? And the Marlins just say, nope, he's yours now. Then that team is saddled with the $8 billion contract or whatever it was
that
Giancarlo Stanton said.
Yeah, this happened back in 1998 with Randy Myers.
Remember Randy Myers?
So the Blue Jays, he was owed a lot of money, about $13 million, which in that time was a lot more than it was now. So the Padres they made the World Series that year. They were a very good team. Myers went on waivers. And the Padres wanted to make sure the Braves didn't get him because they thought that was like the last piece the Braves needed to be able to compete with the Padres for the NL pennant. So the Padres claimed him just so the Braves wouldn't. And then it went through, and then all of a sudden the Padres were stuck with that contract. And apparently, if you listen to some anecdotes from Kevin Towers and you know everybody else with the Blue Jays in that time, they called Kevin Towers in San Diego and said, hey, so do you really want Randy Myers? And Kevin Towers is like, yeah. He's like, you know you have to eat all that money, right? And Kevin Towers goes, well, yeah. And they're like, hey, Kevin, we'll take him back off waivers right now because we think you made a mistake. And Kevin's like, no, I know. We'll take Randy Myers. And they go, okay, have fun. He's yours. And so really just because Kevin Towers wanted to make sure he cock-blocked the Braves from getting Randy Myers – he ended up with $13 million and, you know, I know they made the World Series that year and whatever, but, you know, it wasn't exactly the smartest decision by Kevin Towers in that regard.
Ah, Kevin Towers. One of my favorite Kevin Towers moments, by the way, is when the Padres acquired Doug Mirabelli. And Kevin Towers basically just hated him so much. Doug Mirabelli was a Red Sox fan favorite for so long. And there's a story on hardballtimes.com about this. But I remember Kevin Towers giving a quote. This was back in 2006. In which the Padres traded him to the Red Sox. He was traded at the end of 2005 to the Padres, and then I guess was just a jackass to everybody in San Diego. And basically, when Kevin Towers met him, he said, I so badly wanted to trade Doug Mirabelli to the Yankees just to piss him off. Pretty much. I was like, that was it. He was on the Red Sox from 2009 through the end of 2000, or 2001 to the end of 2005, and then went back to the Red Sox in 2006. And he was Tim Wakefield's guy. He was
right.
Wakefield's catcher, so Wakefield was like a disaster at the beginning of 2006, if I remember right. Doug Mirabelli. But that's one of my favorite things was the Kevin Towers hatred of Doug Mirabelli. which is pretty good.
Love it.
Pretty good. So I guess that's it. We're gonna wrap it up. Yeah. I feel like there are several things that we forgot to get to today. We were gonna air the audio of Butt Black and Chad Bettis from their post game press conferences after Chad's start. But we've already gone long, and it's like 15 minutes worth of audio. It's up at the Rockies site if you want to go find it. There's some really cool stuff in there of Bud Black talking about the very nearly inside the park homer that led off that game. Chad Bettis talking about that, and just the emotions of Chad Bettis' return. Such an amazing story, and such a cool day for the Rockies. We're recording this on Thursday. The Rockies are back at it in 2 hours, coming up against the Atlanta Braves at Coors Field, and then at home this weekend to take on the old pesky Milwaukee Brewers. Kind of strange to get to this point in the season and be like, man, kind of a big series for the wild card race, but the Brewers in town Friday through Sunday, off day Monday, and the Rockies hit the road to Kansas City next week. You're in Southern California. You're getting like a partial eclipse, lame ass.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't even know. Like I was just at a wedding in Cheyenne a couple of weeks ago, and people were already starting to buy tickets to go through Casper, Wyoming.
Dude, somebody said that the state of Wyoming's population is going to double from the tourists that are going there.
That's probably unsurprising. I know people in Casper are selling off their places for the weekend for an Airbnb or for like $3,000.
That is insane.
In Casper, Wyoming.
That's amazing.
Which is not a nice place.
I'm going to a little town in the middle of nowhere in Nebraska where my dad's friend owns a bunch of land, and we're basically just going to hang out and throw up tents and drink beer and then have a weird
Doesn't it last for 3 minutes?
Like, yeah, I think so. Okay. I think like the whole from start to finish, I think it's considerably longer than that, but the actual total eclipse part is only 3 minutes long. But it's bizarre, man. Like apparently I've never experienced one of these. I thought when I was a kid we had had one in Denver, but I don't think we actually did. But it's weird. I was reading this thing yesterday that was like, it will literally go as dark as night. Animals will get confused. You might start like seeing bizarre shadows that don't occur other times in any other natural cycle of the sun and the moon other than when they occur during an eclipse. Kind of excited for it.
Watch out for lizard people too, cool. Apparently.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. I mean, if the world ended on Monday, like, is it really that bad anymore? Like, is it really going to be that? I don't know if I'd be that sad.
Yeah.
At this stage.
Whatever.
This time 6 years ago, I think I would have been like, man, but there's so much cool stuff going on nowadays. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, that'll do it. We'll be back next week. Actually, the next few weeks are going to be super weird, so we're going to have to figure out when to record. Because next week, I'm hitting the road to Albuquerque, where I will be catching a weekend of Topes baseball and doing some fishing, along with Josh Jackson of MILB.com. And then the week after that, I leave for Canada for the WBSC Under-18 Baseball World Cup. So I'm going to be gone for that for like 11
days. You know,
so
my wedding's coming up, right? Days.
What?
You know, my wedding's coming up, right?
Your wedding. Like you're getting married?
No. Wedding just means an adult bris.
I think that's illegal in most areas of the world.
Nah, I got a guy.
Ew, gross. That's what a weird guy to have. What a weird hookup. No. I got an adult bris guy.
I got an adult bris guy. Exactly.
Yeah, no. And then I got, I'm all booked for that. I got my flights. I got my hotel. I got everything for that. I got the suit. I also, when I went and got measured for the suit, put in my measurements on the suit thing that we're ordering the suits from, they emailed back and they were like, you seem to be in between measurements for some things. Would you be okay if we sent you this size? And I was just so, I was like, yeah, I guess, whatever. And if it comes and I was right about the measurements, I'm going to be so, so arrogant about it. I'm going to email them back and be like, you know why I put in the measurements the way I did? Because they were right. That's why. Well. But they said if that happens, they'll just send me another suit and it'll be fine. So
free of charge. Yeah,
I guess that's gonna be okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine, guy.
You're doing good. So it's at the end of September. That'll be good.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week sometime. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
I had coffee today, and already it's not enough coffee to deal with you.
Well, I'm already drunk, and it's not enough drunk to deal with you.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning there.
It's
9:06 in the morning there.
It's 9:06 in the morning here.
You have a problem.
You have a problem.
Your problem is to have.
Yeah.
Shut up.
You shut up.
Shut up.
Shut up.